Hello and welcome to Public Access America. This is Just the Tip. Just the Tip. My name is Jason. We just finished up our YouTube live stream recording over on Public Access America like we do every Sunday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Central Time. We talked to Karen from the EarKick app, and we learned about her, and I love this idea of seeing the world as more of a global community than a specific region. We all come from somewhere, but some of us come from more than one place, and seeing the world as just a bigger thing than we do now, I think is critically important, and that's going to be my tip. Thank you for listening to Public Access America. You can find our podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcast, like you've been doing, on Spotify, Apple, or even, for our disabled listeners, Victor Reader. Let's get into the show. Thanks for being here. Love ya.
Just a tip, just a tip, just a tip.
Thank you.
It is time now for something positive.
We might be headed to the promised land.
The promised land, speaking the truth and finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
The problem can only be solved when there is a kind of coalition of conscience.
That is how it works.
This is the beginning. It is not the finale. And that's why we're here. And that's why we rally.
We've got to be that creative minority.
Find a way to get in the way. I got in trouble. It was good trouble. It was necessary trouble.
Franklin, I know we've got to do something.
I was almost going to respond to the, where am I, to the tweet. I have about five.
Well, I can see you.
There it is. I have about five tabs open. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Public Access America. My name is Jason because that's what my mom named me. His name is Jeffrey because that's what his father named him. And her name is Karen. And I think that's because that's what their parents decided on. Happy Father's Day and welcome to another episode. Karen from EarKick, I am so happy and excited to have you here. You started what is about 2 months of amazing shows for us because it just really highlighted mental illness and the importance of it and solutions to that. And it all culminated in like one thought, one idea. And I loved that. And I want to have you back on monthly if we can, or bi-monthly, however we can, to get you on the show, just so that we can emphasize to people the importance of the solutions for their well-being. I'm calling it mental well-being now. I'm not calling it mental health.
Yeah, you know, it's actually good to call it mental well-being. Not everyone is comfortable with that, but I think we both mean the same. It needn't be all that, you know, negative and you know, burden kind of language.
Right.
It's something we all have, right? And mental well-being is more on a positive side, on what we believe we can be and what we believe we can do with our own hands, right?
Right.
So yeah, I agree. Why not call it mental well-being?
That's the goal. That's where I'm aiming for.
Well, you know, don't we all want everyone to be well?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think so. I just don't think, I think the pressures of everything just tell us that we can be well once everything is done. You know, like it's okay for things to encroach on our well-being because, well, it'll be over soon and then we can get back. And we forget that it scars us and leaves us wounded for the next adventure. But
yeah.
Today, I wanted to ask, I'm sorry, Jeffrey, I wanted to ask Karen just some, I was reading her bio on Twitter, and you're originally from Colombia, and you ended up in Zurich, and a lot of people I'm noticing are upset with where they are. They don't want to change their surroundings, and they don't feel that they can take a journey like that, and so I'm just kind of curious why you would make that journey. What pushed you to... What led you to new surroundings like that?
Oh, well, so I'm half Colombian. So okay. I'm my mother is Colombian. My father is Swiss.
Okay.
So I'm what is called a Colo Suiza.
Nice.
And I was born in Basel, which is in Switzerland, because of many reasons. I was not able to grow up in Colombia.
Oh, okay.
However, I grew up with, you know, like Colombians around me in Switzerland. And I always felt odd because I was the only curly-haired, dark kid. And it felt like everyone, it felt like it was not true, but in the 70s, everyone was blonde, it seemed, and blue-eyed, and they all had, you know, they were all kind of Swiss and had Swiss ancestors. So I was like the only, what we call the black fly in the white milk. And it made me really feel like I don't belong there. So I made my way out of Switzerland by myself at 15. And I thought at that time, very, very naive, I guess, I thought going to America would solve the problem because it's a melting pot. You know, that's pre-internet. And it just sounded so fantastic, you know, all these like people all coming to that country and you know, English being the common language and all these ideas, idealistic ideas I had. So I ended up first in Denver, Colorado, in a black neighborhood, which was really interesting because then I also felt like I was very different.
Right.
And then in New Jersey, in a Jewish neighborhood, I'm partly Jewish, but, you know, like it still felt very different. So I realized slowly that it's not about looks or religion or anything. It's a global topic to find where you belong. It's not given, right? Nobody's right. Going to make it for you. It's part of identity forming, but also part of life to make some compromises and to you know, to find inner peace with who you are and what you look and the cards you were dealt. All my life I've been a heavy asthmatic. I didn't ask for that, right? I didn't ask for asthma, but at some point you realize, yeah, it's part of who I am and it may be part of a good part of me. So in the US, then I had to go back to Europe after high school to finish my basically European high school. And then I went back to the United States, this time to LA to study music. I'm a professional musician in my first life. And there I had my first child very, very early. I was a very young mom. And I had to go back because it was the time of the riots in LA and the big earthquake. So I was like, maybe not have the baby grow up there.
I ended up in LA that you found the melting pot you were looking for, right?
Yeah, they all spoke Spanish, if you mean that. Yes,
well,
but, you know,
it's a group of people. There's little communities of people, but they all intergate. They all interact. They all have lives separate from their identities.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is true. But, you know, that the problem that I was trying to solve is I thought at that time that it's all about understanding each other's language or all about, you know, common ideas. And that's just part of the story. The challenge is that people, we're not so good at always being at peace with each other and with ourselves. And that's a challenge that's not purely solved by moving to another country. However, moving to another country, I moved then to Germany, and from Germany I moved to Singapore. You know, like I've had my share, 30 years abroad. And in every place I landed, I was always very happy for the new adventures. And for like, it feels like having a second, third, fourth chance at life. And that's wonderful. The downside a bit is that you really have to compromise. I picked up 8 languages on my way. And you have to like, you're not never going to be home. You're gonna be a bit different, you know?
Right.
And what you learn is a rich set of skills and on how not to lose yourself completely because you have a core identity, but also not to be stubborn and like reject other people. And that has made my life really rich. Now, to your question, why did I come back? Singapore was my last basically station. And I thought, okay, I need to go back to Switzerland and make peace with the factors and the things that made me go away. And that I was going to give it a shot. I was in Impact Hub Zurich at that time, offered me a position. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try, right? And my kids are grown up, so I didn't have to like move the whole family mm-hmm. from one side to the other. And now I'm here. I still feel the nomad drive, you know, when the wind changed, and I still feel like, oh, I could go somewhere else. and I live very close, like minutes from the lake. That's why my hair is wet, Zurich Lake. It gives me a sense of like, I could go anywhere, anytime. But for now, fingers crossed, I have held out here for a good 3 years, 4 years, I believe. and it's good. I would encourage anyone to try. I know I was very lucky to have the opportunity to go other countries, but there is always a way you can make it somewhere else. Even if it's just exposing yourself for a while and then coming back.
Yeah.
And it's just good for us, you know, to see that not everything revolves around ourselves and our problems. Not everyone observes you all the time. And, you know, it's sometimes good to just be a nobody somewhere.
Some humility, right?
It's great also because you can rewrite your story a little bit. You know, if you feel that people are unfair to you in one place and that they must misjudge you, you can start anew in a new place and you can rewrite your story and you can make new friends. And it nothing that is uncomfortable over the long haul needs to stay that way. You know, you're in the driver's seat of many things, not everything, but of many things.
Right.
You know, you are in the driver's seat. Yeah.
I love that.
I've got to ask, Jason, did you somehow get a hold of my German thesis from 10 years ago, 12 years ago?
I dox you. I've been doxing you for 2 years, buddy. I know everything.
Yeah, cutting, kann ich nur ein bisschen Deutsch sprechen. Ist sehr akademisch, aber es ist okay.
Sehr gut, aber hallo.
We have a big listenership in Germany, so danke schön.
You do? Yeah, vielen. Oh, dann möchte ich aber von euch hören. Yeah, that's great. I didn't know that. So what was your thesis about in German?
So my German thesis was actually on Turkish and Greek, the lack of a home that a lot of the population feels they have post the mm-hmm. Gastarbeiter pogrom. And mm-hmm. so like, I really dug into what were the similarities between the Turkish and Greek experience and immigration in the United States and what that looked like.
Wow.
That's amazing.
So for my research, what I ended up doing was I ended up reading a bunch of different authors that were, you know, German and, so German and Spanish, German and mm-hmm. Japanese, German and Greek, German and Turkish, and compared that to, you know, how, you know, I would say what we would, you know, what we would call the DACA kids and, you know, other, you know, people who have immigrated to the United States, mostly focusing on southern border mm-hmm. and how, you know, for the Turkish and Greek, people, you know, they didn't feel at home in Germany because, you know, there's a lot of the German laws that don't apply to them. Like, you know, they're never going to be, you know, quote unquote civilians of the country. Germany is a land for the Germans. That's the way that their constitution is written. But because they grew up in Germany, it was the closest thing to home that they had. And a lot of the times when they would go back home, quote unquote, back home to Greece or to Turkey, they weren't looked at as Turkish or Greek either because they had grown up in Germany. And mm-hmm. so, you know, they could be fluent speakers, you know, and they wouldn't necessarily even sound like they have any type of an accent in their home language because, you know, they grew up with Turkish and Greek parents. Mm-hmm. But because of the fact that they didn't belong to German society and they didn't belong to Turkish or Greek society, they never felt like they were at home anywhere. And so so it's kind of like a what I kind of called Heimlosigkeit. And so just, you know, it's a very interesting experience of, you know, it's not homelessness as we would think of in American context, but in a fact that you just don't belong anywhere. And there was an author, I believe his name was Jose Efa Oliver. He was Spanish and German. He was a poet, and he kind of talked about this in one of his poems, where, you know, he wasn't necessarily Spanish, but he wasn't necessarily German either. And he kind of coined a new word that doesn't, you know, didn't really exist in German. But, you know, the lovely thing about languages is that you can create language and create meaning behind it. And so he called it Heimatlos. And so, you know, there's that lack of a homeland and that feeling of never really belonging.
It's so related to that Heimatlosigkeit. I used to call myself Heimatlos. Even though I have two passports and, you know, officially I belong to both countries, Colombia and Switzerland, but it's that feeling. And, you know, after giving it many, many thoughts and living in Germany, I firsthand saw that play out in the Turkish, second generation, basically. Not so much in the Greek, where I stayed in the north for 20 years in Germany, but I felt this Heimatlos. And I decided at some point that I was going to turn this pain or whatever, you know, like that longing into something positive. And the way I told my children, I taught them, it was like, I'm no longer Heimatlos. I am a bridge now. Like I'm okay yes. with being between two pillars. I'm okay because I'm good at this bridging, you know, and people love bridges. So I'm going to stop longing for being like one side or the other. I'm going to focus on being that bridge. And that helped me. You know, it helped me. Nowadays, I call myself a nomad. But it's not comparable to what some Turkish people and Greek people experience in Germany. There's also other citizens that do get a passport, by the way. It's not impossible nowadays to become a German, but it's still just a passport, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not something that you can, it's not a second layer of skin or something, you right, know? It's right. just a passport. And you have to find your, you know, your inner peace with it, definitely.
Yes.
Syrian refugees changed the face of Germany in a very positive way. And so yeah. I think Germany's realizing that, you know, a little inclusion here and there is a good thing, you know?
Yeah, it takes me a little longer, but yeah, I think at least the younger generation woke up to the fact that it's actually their luck that like there's people coming. It's the same in Switzerland. We had a lot of people from south, from
yeah,
like Tamils. Come over. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge discussion. And, you know, it added to my anger about why we're not so international here back in the 70s, 80s. And now when I came back after so many years to live in Switzerland, you know, these people who were at the total bottom of society, and, you know, the Swiss wouldn't even talk to them sometimes because mm-hmm. for them, they were like under dogs, whatever. And the fun thing is you can't stop them from going to school, from becoming really good, from then becoming directors of banks mm-hmm. and executives. And when I came back and saw all the children of the people who had to flee to Switzerland, being in these huge positions, being in the army, leading other people and speaking Swiss, you know, like
yeah.
funny language, I was like, okay, good. You know, we're getting healthy here.
30% of Zurich is foreign, and I like that.
Yes.
And they have, Switzerland has four languages. So
four national languages.
German, yes. French, Italian, and what is that?
Romansh.
Okay.
Romansh.
It's a very old, it's a very strange language. I love it. I only understand, but I can't speak. And it's only spoken by the people in the mountains, kind of.
Okay.
And within the official language, there is six or more like we call idioms, differences between them. And it's a cultural treasure. But to be honest, within Switzerland, if we don't speak one of the other languages, which we are actually required to, we just turn to English. So you will hear a lot of English spoken. In the German part, we speak Swiss, which is like...
Schweizerdeutsch, yep.
Schweizerdeutsch, exactly. The Germans don't understand, but we understand. It's perfect. And then there's French, and then there's Italian, then there's Romansh. And we're required to learn French, but only French. And the French-speaking part is required to learn German. And we mutually hate it, of course, in school. And now the young generation, they all speak English. So you don't even bother to try to do something with your rusty French or rusty German. Because everyone is really fluent in English. It's amazing. Yeah. Not sure if that's good or not, but it is what it is.
I think America could take an example from that. Yeah. Zurich is a mini growing melting pot. And it's like,
yes,
its conditions suit that. I mean, how many languages, nine did you say, languages that you
speak? Eight.
Eight. I can barely speak one.
I've got two under my belt and I can understand a handful of others.
I can understand Tagalog a little bit, but I can't.
Oh, wow.
I can't speak too much Tagalog.
It's not easy, Tagalog. It's got some Spanish in there. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it either, only the Spanish words.
Right.
Well, you know, Zurich had to become that because we've got Meta here, we've got Apple here, we've got Microsoft here, we've got Google here. A lot of big tech companies have chosen to come to Zurich for a couple of reasons. One being the nearness to very well-educated students. The ETH is one of the best universities in the world. And then there is the quality of life. And if you want good talent to stay, you got to offer them something. So it's not so much the lake, which is beautiful, but the circumstances, it's very safe. You know, you can leave the doors unlocked and et cetera. That get people to want to be in Switzerland. And that's an advantage in Zurich right now because Meta is setting up a lot of, you know.
I feel like Karen is trying to recruit me in a way to move to Zurich.
Yeah, you have to make, you know, you have to come over and get going because I might leave.
There you go.
In a few years. No, I mean, really, come over. Yeah, really come over. You'll be my guest. I mean, that's my Latino part of me is like, you all come to my house. You know, there's always some space.
That's how I feel. I love that. But I think it's important. And Jeffrey, you've moved around a lot too. But I think I have too. I just don't feel settled in any one place, you know. And I think that's grown for me to see more of a global community because I want to feel settled where I am, and I can't do that by saying I'm from Florida. But if I say I'm from Earth, well, yeah, now I feel settled. I'm in a good place, right where I should be, you know?
For me, it's always been like when I've moved to different places, there are different aspects of the community that I'm around that, you know, you can find home in.
Right.
So like growing up in Montana, being a Montanan is a strange thing in and of itself because we always, no joke, wherever we go, we always seem to find each other. It's the weirdest shit ever. It's not a big state. There's only like a million people in the entire state.
Yeah.
Yet somehow we always find each other no matter where we go. I have run into Montanans in Arizona. I've run into Montanans in DC of all places. I've run into Montanans in California. You know, a few weeks ago, I went out to the gun range and I ran into a couple of people who, I ran into a couple of Montanans, one who's, you know, literally, you know, maybe a couple hours from my hometown and another couple of people who, you know, they're from here, but kids going to school at Montana State. And so, you know, it's we just have this weird ability to find each other. And I don't know how to explain it other than that. We all just kind of get each other. But
a million people say, hey, I got an idea. It's so easy for those million people to hear it. Hey, I'm going to go to Washington State. Suddenly 20,000 Montanans hear that that's the thing to do. And you all go to Washington State and then you get together and you're like, hey, I think Arizona's nice. And then you all end up down there.
But you know what? I just read something interesting. I didn't finish it, but like kind of like the headline was like, the billionaires are moving to Montana and, mm-hmm. you know, like learning the fish and all that. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
It's a really great state it's wide open. It's just really.
So the thing about Montana is that, at least I would say up until recently, you know, Montana was always one of those places where people kind of ended up finding their connection to nature and being uh-huh. outside.
Yellowstone's like partly there, right?
Partly. But everybody found something different. And, you know, if you grew up there, you kind of understand it. You may not exactly enjoy the politics, but there's just something about the place and the people. The people are friendly, you know, for the most part. And everybody's kind of got a, you know, your business is your own. My mm-hmm. business is my own. We kind of just leave each other alone and we're friendly along the way. One of the funniest things, when I was in college, I took my buddy Travis back to Montana to go hunting on my ranch. And as you know, we're in this 2-lane road, you know, out in the middle of eastern Montana, you know, as we're driving by, some person, you know, passes me and you wave at them and they wave at me and we just keep going. And my buddy Travis goes, "Oh, did you know that person?" I went, "Nope." And he was just like taken aback by the fact that I would just wave at a stranger. It's like, it's Montana. Like, you know, we wave at each other because yeah. the chances are that you're going to see another car coming down this road anytime in the next hour is probably pretty small. You know, yeah. or, you know, like for me growing up in Montana, if somebody was broke down on the side of the road, you stopped and you helped them.
Right.
That's just how you did yeah. it. Like, yeah. and people who weren't from Montana didn't understand that. So like there was one time where, you know, there was an elderly couple that, you know, I was driving back from one of the towns and I encountered an elderly couple that had broken down on the side of the road. They weren't from Montana. They were from a larger city, and how they were on my stretch of highways, I don't even understand that. But so I pull over to help them out, and you know, they were very suspicious of, you know, my help. And you know, as a kid, I didn't necessarily understand that because this was just what I grew up doing. Somebody right. broke down, you helped them. That was just all there was to it. And so we get to talking with them, you know, they're not from here at all. And I said, "Well, the closest shop is going to be, you know, about 10 minutes into town." And you know, it was like 100+ degrees that day. Their car is not running. I'm like, "Look, I got air conditioning. Why don't you lock your car, get in with me, I will take you into the shop, we'll figure out how to get your car towed in and at least get you out of the heat, because it's pretty oppressive when it gets up over 100 So I get him into the shop, and I you know, grabbed, you know, Scotty, who was the head mechanic there at the time, and asked him if he had a trailer that, you know, we could get their car up on. No. So we go to my shop, because you know, this is literally small town America. So the gas station / mechanic shop in town doesn't have a tow truck, and it doesn't have, you know, a trailer that we can put this vehicle up on. So we literally just go to, you know, my farm shop, grab my, you know, our farm trailer, and we go out there and we grab this vehicle, get it up on the trailer, get it hauled into the shop, drop it off. And the thing is like, you know, most people, like at this point, you know, somebody's, one of you two is probably trying to figure out, "So how much did you get paid for this?"
Yeah. What's it going to cost?
I didn't get paid anything for it, because this is just what you do.
That's just yeah. what you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, somebody needed help, you just help them. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't thinking about, you know, "Oh, I'm going to get paid by this couple," or, "Oh, the shop's going to pay me, you know, gas mileage for towing." That's just not how it works. I mean, even when we worked cattle, you couldn't pay people to come help you work cattle. But if you said beer and pizza at the bar, mm-hmm. you'd have more trucks and trailers show up than you needed.
Because it's better to be a part of a community than isolated yeah. and rich, you know?
So, yeah. And so Montana, you know, it's weird. There's the sense of community of, "Hey, I help you, you help me. We just kind of do whatever." But then you also have this, "I do my own thing, you do your own thing. We really don't, you know."
Right.
At least that's the way that it used to be when I was a kid.
Karen,
you know?
Yeah. Karen mentioned in LA that she was in a black community and that felt like weird. I
that was in Denver. Yeah.
Oh, in Denver. I did.
Boulder, yeah.
I did that myself, you know, because of income. I'm on disability. I can only afford certain housing. And that was how Jeffrey described it. Once people mm-hmm. knew that I wasn't there to judge them and that I mm-hmm. would leave them alone if they had a fight, we were friends. And yeah. I got too much Costco one day and I left it on their doorstep and they came down and they were like, why'd you do this? And I was like, 'cause I bought too much. I didn't see the sizes. I don't need 1,000 Nutribars, you know?
Right.
And so they came down and they were like, hey, it was 2-for-1 pizza. So they gave me some pizza and eventually they didn't hate me. They weren't worried about who I was. They were just happy mm-hmm. to know that I was around. And then when something happened, they would come to me and say, hey, could you go talk to the landlord for us? Because yes. they thought I was friends with the only other white guy they knew.
The thing is, you know, in any case, where humans need to behave. Mm-hmm. No matter what color, no yeah. matter what background, whatever, it's the behaving part. And you got to earn the trust, because it just seems like if you look like your neighbor or your neighborhood, it's going to be easier. It's a complete illusion.
Right.
You know, we need to earn our trust. And it's just more obvious when somebody looks different. When I was in Singapore, you know, all Asians, I didn't at that time didn't understand a word of Chinese. And I was like, I feel like from Mars.
Right.
And everything feels different. But I was like, okay, you know, like I'm going to start small. I'm going to try to speak a few words and make a fool of myself. You know, that's human.
Right. But they care that you're trying. They hear that and they're like, oh, that's funny, but thank you. Because you're paying
to be
a little.
Honest, they, yeah.
You're giving a little respect. Right.
Yeah.
Once you start trying, then they try, right?
Right.
Yeah. Now it's a good experience. To be honest, I think every young person who can afford or, you know, do a year outside of their own country or state,
yeah.
go do a social work, something like that. It's great. It's a bit hard in the beginning, but it's probably the best year you'll have in your life.
Yeah.
I sent my daughter when she turned 18. First thing I did, I sent her to Colombia, to Cali,
wow.
very violent city, to work in a slum for a year. And I told her, you can come back if it's too tough. It was the best year of her life. She didn't earn a dime, but she when she tells about it, it's like she was in heaven, in some paradise. It was just because the community there, because, you know, poor people and she was there helping. They just had an amazing community. I said, what do you do? I mean, these guys have no money to go out. And she said, oh, mom, I mean, we just always played with something. We had so much to talk about. I was never lonely, she said. You know, there was yeah. not this, oh, you know, doom scrolling or sitting in front of a TV all day. It just doesn't happen,
right.
you know, for many reasons. And I think every young person should really go, it doesn't have to be working this lump, but doing something that you might not be able to do later when you have responsibilities and jobs and kids and whatnot.
Yeah.
Early on, that's a good one.
I think yeah. One of the biggest things for me, like, because I always wanted to be a world traveler, is that growing up very, very poor,
mm-hmm.
it is just not possible. The fact that I got yeah. to, I only got to go to Japan because I had a buddy who worked for the airlines and he got mm-hmm. steep discounts on tickets. And so
right.
I ended up being able to get a business first class round trip ticket to Japan for $115 wow. bucks.
There you go.
Amazing.
So it's like,
you take
I couldn't
the opportunities
say no.
you get. Right.
I couldn't say no.
Yeah.
But if you were to tell me that it's like, oh, hey, you need to go see this place. You know, at the time, those tickets cost, you know, $1,300 round trip. Mm-hmm. And I could barely afford rent as it was.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I really took a hit on that one to go, but it was so mm-hmm. worth it.
I yeah, agree.
It you is. Know,
I think children nowadays, they forego the challenge for the mediocrity of consistency. And so they live in a sort of boredom because they're never challenged. And then once they are, when they're 40, they're upset about it. But I think like what you did with your daughter is you said, here's going to be a hardship and yeah. you're going to overcome it. And the lesson that you're going to learn from being scared and then overcoming something is something you can take in your future when you realize yeah. things are different and I'm alone, but that's okay because I'd been there before and I survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not for every child, I'm sure, or a young person, but the ones that are kind of willing to go, we should really make it possible. And you know, the other way to travel is to read. My childhood, I read a lot. I read myself to an Arctic and back. I read myself to the Kilimanjaro and back. You know, if you can't travel for financial reasons or whatever it is, or maybe you can't let someone, you know, that you're in charge of be alone, at least turn to books.
Yeah.
Because that's, you can just disappear for hours.
Or podcasts.
Podcasts? Also good. I mean, podcasts didn't exist at that time. Right. But yes. But podcast is a good one too.
I love it.
And just listening to the sounds of a different country or the sounds of a different language, that also does something to your soul. Agreed. It does something to your mind, right?
Yeah. I think we want to be self-isolated so that we can feel superior. We were talking about foods, and what I thought of was, what do white supremacists eat? Because the melting pot of America gives us our foods.
Crow.
They have to, because there's nothing else American except possum, like, that I can think of that wasn't an influence from another country. So,
the language we speak isn't even our own. It comes from England.
Exactly. You know,
and the English the language is a mixture of German and French, so here you go, you know.
Lots of German, French, and Latin, and even German is a mix of German and Latin, and you know, it's for me, like, especially like where I studied German linguistics a lot, and you know, can go back and I can read Old English and Old German and I can understand where the language started to split and how they became different. Like, it's really interesting to see that. But also too, like in my own experience, there are just some things that, you know, if you understand community at all, you find experience and relatable experience. So like when I moved to Phoenix, the number of people of color that I was around was more than I'd ever been around in my entire life. I have always said that where I grew up, it was whiter than a snowball in a blizzard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, but when I moved down to Phoenix, now you have a heavy Latino community, a heavy Hispanic community. And it's like, I feel a little out of place in a lot of ways, but I ended up getting invited, you know, to a few different family functions.
Yeah. Cause they'll feed you.
they'll feed you, and I luckily make friends very easily.
Right.
But having grown up in a large Catholic family, you know, a lot of them are Catholic. Mm. And so there was a lot of things that were very familiar to me because they were a large Catholic family. You know, the large gatherings, the food, just the having fun with family. Like, I felt more at home with those friends than I did with most of the white people I met when I was living in Phoenix.
You know why?
Because it felt familiar.
Because you earned it. Because it wasn't just people that were supposed to like you. It was people that decided, hey, we want to like this guy. And that feels so good, you know, to go out on your own and not know anybody and then meet somebody and be like, that's my friend. I made that myself. That's not like an extension of somebody I knew, right? That's really neat.
Yeah, you know, the food part is so important. You know, people bond over food. Mm-hmm. And if it's something that everyone has to do, you know, eat is something that you do every day.
Right.
And I think a lot of conflicts can be just, you know, resolved over a good potluck.
I love potlucks. Yes.
Yeah, because it gives you something to talk about. It's all your senses are involved and there is no right or wrong. It's like, you know, like, it's interesting. You try this and oh, that's how you do the chicken. Or, oh, that's how you do this and this vegetable. Mm-hmm. And there's a mutual curiosity and wanting to know more that is the opposite of being judgmental and the opposite of being distrustful or, you know, like expecting others to be bad.
Right.
So food goes a very long way. And it's something that, you know, every culture found out that food kind of appeases people.
Right.
And we should do more of that, you know. If I mean, we have a lot, Zurich has a lot of Ukrainian refugees now, thank God. I mean, I can't wait for this mix to come out, right? And I can't wait to see their cuisine take a hold here and enrich what we eat here.
Right.
I can't wait. And all these people that are bringing me new ideas on how to cook food, how to you know, what is tasty to them, what is a dessert, what is a hors d'oeuvre, you know.
Right.
It's so cool. And I think it's the common things, the mundane little things that help you overcome certain barriers of identity, of prejudice, whatever it is.
Agreed.
Food is a good one.
Yeah. And I think that's been like one of my favorite things about being able to move between large cities is I've gotten to try a lot of different food that I would have never imagined, you know. You know, for me, it was actually finding good Mexican food in Arizona. And then up here, it's been, I've gotten to try any number of different fantastic things like great Indian food. I've gotten to try great Vietnamese food. I've gotten to try,
he loves his German food there.
I do love and that's, you know, that I think that's probably one of the more interesting ones is because, like, you know, Debbie is, you know, Debbie has this fantastic palate that can taste everything. But the excitement Debbie gets for German food is like unparalleled in a lot of ways.
I love that.
You know, and it's so funny because like a lot of the stuff that it's very close to a lot of the stuff that I grew up eating because my family's very German. So, you know, there were certain things that I just, you know, I was used to eating.
Right. Comfort.
It was very close to those things. So like, having some of those dishes, I'm like, oh yeah, no, I grew up with, you know, dishes that were very familiar to this, or very similar to this. And so for me, it's like, you know, it just kind of felt like another region of home in a lot of ways. Like,
yeah.
You know, having German food is just like, oh yeah, no, this totally would seem like something that would have been on my, you know, on my plate somewhere.
I love that. My aunt, my grandmothers, they're all from Norway. Hi, Norway, by the way. They are they are the country that is listening to us the second most to the United States. So I love
Norway.
I love you, Norway. My great aunt, Signe Godi, and my grandmother, they were from Norway. And my aunt would give my mom these cookies, Fuddymen, every Christmas, but she wouldn't give them to anybody else. And then one day my mom let me have one. And I was like, this is dry. You know, like this is star anise in dough, right? And I was like, this is dry. But then about 20 years later, I asked somebody from Norway, I want Fuddymen. Like I really, and they gave me the recipe and I made it and it felt like home. And then I gave that to the people that at the party I was with and they all loved it. And they asked me to make that still because now it feels like home to them. And I love that idea of you bring your food. I brought mashed potatoes to a Filipino potluck. And the best thing was in the morning to see four or five Filipinos around the table using spices on their mashed potatoes. Like, did you try the garlic? I love it. Did you try the lemon pepper? Yeah. What is this? What is this mashed potato thing? Jason, can you make more?
It's funny.
Yeah.
What mashed potatoes, aka Irish guacamole.
Right.
What we always call it.
Irish guacamole. Oh, I've never heard that one. Oh my god.
That's so funny though. But I mean, realistically, like, that's, you know, potatoes are one of those things, like, I think so many different cultures have potato as a part of their diet.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, like, to learn, you know, what everybody else does with their potatoes, because it's like, here's this food that I've had in so many forms and I've yet to really have a bad potato experience.
Right.
But I have realized that my potato experience is extremely limited. And now it's like, I just want to try all the different potatoes because, because it just kind of seems like everybody has their own take on the spicing, their own take on the cooking, their own take on, and every time you have it, like I have yet to really go, nope. I think the only one that I've ever really had an issue with is potato salad. You know, at least American potato salad, which is like you know, not really, you know, the potatoes aren't really cooked all that well.
It's mostly just
mayonnaise and mustard maybe some like really nasty onion. But when I was in college, one of my German friends was like, oh, I'll bring potato salad. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't like potato salad. It's pretty nasty. And she looks at me and goes, but you've never had German potato salad, have you? And
I went,
that's something else.
And I went, wait, the Germans have their own potato salad? I am intrigued. And it turns out I actually really like German potato salad.
There's so many varieties of that. You know, the fun thing is that in our team at Irkik, we're 10 nationalities. And I dream of having everyone, because some of them I have never met in person, having a retreat where we have a kitchen. It can all be tents or whatever, but good kitchen. And then we're going to do exactly that. There's going to be potatoes one day, and everyone does one kind of potatoes, favorite one. Then there's pasta maybe, and then there's pizza maybe. And it's just going to be all around food and you know, spices and what's the best hack here. And yes, that plays, it not only is good for you as a team, but it also plays with your creativity, with your imagination. And imagine all these developers and techies and cooking, you know, and then going home very, at least me, very inspired to try out all these things. So I can totally relate to what you said.
Oh, yeah. Take something that's so familiar to you, a.k.a. the potato, but then find out that, you know, the way that you have interacted with the potato is now like just one tiny little sliver of how you can interact with potatoes in general.
Yeah. I had the Indian food I had potatoes in the stuffing, chickpea stuffing. I loved it because I love chickpeas. And I didn't know they had potatoes in India. It just fascinated me that it was in there and it fit perfectly. There was about 40 ingredients and none of them were unnatural. You know, it was like mint and sage and all these and cumin, and it was just so good. I loved learning that the potato was there.
And then there's, you know, once you get into talking about food, making food, sharing food, breaking the bread together, there's just very little room for judgment and for pickiness and you know, all these ugly sides that we can have, right?
I think that's been one of the, like, at least in this house, one of the things that we've always said is you've never met somebody who's angry and eating tacos at the same time.
Right?
Like, there's just something about tacos that, you know, whenever you're interacting with people who are also eating tacos, they tend to be pretty chilled out.
Agreed.
You know, and the glorious thing is that, you know, tacos are another one of those things. You can do so many different things with them.
Yeah.
Like, I would have never imagined vegetarian tacos tasting good, but I was at a street truck in California having vegetarian tacos. And I was like, oh, these are actually really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, and that's the glorious thing is that you can take one simple thing and figure out how to include so many different people. You know, potatoes are vegetarian, but by adding, you know, meat, you've got the meat eater side. By adding, you know, by keeping dairy out, you can keep, you know, help the people who can't do dairy. By adding certain spices, you know, for example, turmeric is one of our favorites. You know, turmeric is great for, you know, inflammation. You know, they're just, you can figure out so many different things to do with all these things. And it just kind of shows you, hey, you know, this is one little piece of the puzzle of inclusion.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's so many foods that do so many different things, and we have so many problems that could just be solved by that. I want to get, I actually had that all planned for the second hour. Sneak peek, by the way. And I do want to turn because Karen mentioned Irkik, and I just saw a tweet that said there is a lot of advancements at Irkik that we need to talk about. So I'm kind of excited to hear more. I want to say, I want to say happy Father's Day to my daddy, Kai. And I had Kai download the Irkik app and so that they could be on the show. She could be on the show, but she has a family dinner and this was, we're going to have her on with you next month, and we're going to discuss how it is, because Kai not only is a member of the LGBT community being ace, but she's also legally blind and amazing and independent and funny as heck. So I wanted her opinion on it. She's also very musical.
Great.
And I wanted her to find the ambient mixer.
Oh, great. That's cool.
But she has a lot of stresses. She has a lot of young people are looking to identify with certain spectrums. And so when they find one, they're finding where they want to be on it. So nobody is anything, but discovering that little parts of you may be are interesting. And that's what Kai taught me. And she's using the EarKick app now. So what is she getting?
That's amazing.
What is she finding now that
she's first of all, for the ones that have been using it before, we had a rebrand. So you see that we have panda now. Yes. And just, you know, why? It's when you're struggling with anxiety, you know, stress, depression, and going through hard times, it's, you need some empathy and you won't find it all the time. So we came up with Panda. The EarKick is a panda. Aww. And it's this furry little ball, you know, and it's the characteristics of a panda that are important, because, well, they're not just sweet. They're also, you know, their presence makes you be chilled.
Mm-hmm.
Then sometimes they're clumsy. A lot of people who struggle with mental health or other issues feel like people judge them because they're awkward or whatever, you know. Uh-huh. And here's this animal that's amazingly clumsy, but so sweet, and the whole world loves it, right? So, you know, clumsy is not equal as bad, right?
Right.
It has attentive ears, you know, it's a very good listener. And, you know, it's internationally loved. The panda likes, as an animal, likes to be, it needs a lot of time alone, but it's still a social animal, other than people sometimes think. So it strikes the balance between needing me time and also being a good comrade, right?
Right.
It is witty. It is more intelligent than most people think. Hence, the clumsiness has nothing to do with intelligence. And it needs, you know, a lot of time to digest food, to digest things, right? And that's why it sleeps a lot. And they hug. They're known for hugging.
Aww.
They hug for reassurance and for safety, but they don't want to be hugged all the time. And, you know, they're playful and curious, but they can also be angry and they can be sad, you know? So I thought when we came up with the panda, it needed to be us. It needed to be all of us mental health warriors and mental health advocates. And, you know, next to that, we gave him a little scar across the heart.
Aww.
Because Panda has been, you know, it's a true mental health warrior. It has been hurt, but not broken. We all have been hurt. And if we haven't, we will be hurt, but we will never be broken. And that's why it has this this scar. And it lights up when it's angry. And it has a little star in its ear because to symbolize, you know, the goals and the things that the panda can do and the user can do on their own. So, you know, you have this toolbox, these stars that help you in the ear or outside to manage, you know, daily life when it gets stressful, when anxiety hits, when panic hits, whatever. And so that's one thing. So the panda is new. People really love it. I have like a GIF out on Reddit that does belly breathing, where the belly kind of swells up.
Really?
Love it. Yeah. And because it makes you calm down immediately. It's rather than telling people, now you need to breathe, you just look at it and it does it in front of your eyes. And just looking at it makes you stop and calm down a little bit. So that's a panda. And then we introduced Streaks, because people, it's not like it's super easy to log your mood and do a few things, but to keep it up, you kind of need it. You need a reminder. You need a bit of gamification. So we have Streaks, and you can have 7-day streaks, 14-day streaks, up to almost infinity. And it's like a game. So if you have, let's say, very small goals like drinking water, you can have that goal. You can 8 times a day. You can
get
playfully
a reminder.
Check it off, get a reminder, check it off. And if you get to the 8 times, it becomes golden. Like you have, you know, your little badge there. And it's just very playful now. And the idea behind it is to really show people, look, you don't have to have large goals. You can have very small goals that you achieve, and you need reasons to tap yourself on the shoulder and say, well done. If that is brushing your teeth, fine. You deserve gold. If that is, you know, climbing a high mountain, that's also fine. We're not comparing here.
Right.
Everyone is on their own journey and needs their own streak. So the streak, cold streak experience, the goal experience is new, and it's a lot of fun. And then you can also prioritize and rearrange whatever goals you have. And we all know that checking off goals on a regular basis and checking your, like, logging your mood does make you feel better. We have signal, we have data that this is the case. So if we get people to just do little things, but continuously, they will see over time that their anxiety resides, that their mood gets more stable or improves. And so we want to make it really easy for people to have this goal experience and have many reasons to tap themselves on the shoulder. And then, you know, since we spoke, a few ugly things have happened, like, you know, Uvalde happened and shootings happened, and you feel so powerless in that moment. Wow.
Can I ask really quickly, is Uvalde something that's felt around the world?
It is, but it's felt much more, it's felt in the US. So people react to it. So we can measure anxiety and people, especially in California, you could see a high spike of anxiety setting in again, especially among young people because of school. So I translated the whole app to Spanish. You know, it took me a couple of nights, but it was the only thing that I felt I could do. You know, I can't be there. You know, you can't. It's such a tragedy, and it will probably reoccur. But the worst for me really was that it hit, you know, the Latino community unproportionally high. And, you know, these kids all had Latin, Spanish names. And it was really, really, really tragic, right? Really tragic. And, you know, I was taught to do something to, you know, get going. And so we translated it in Spanish. It's not perfect yet, of course, but it'll be perfect soon so that people can use it, because the app is, as you know, it's completely free and it's anonymous. Right. And I think even if people speak English, but they feel like they want to, you know, voice record or video record their day, their thoughts in their mother tongue, they should be able to do so. Yeah. So that's what we did, and that's what's new. I think there's other things, the tiny little things. We did some videos, and we've got a new ambassador, a wonderful lady from California, 20 years old, who's into mental health and mindfulness and everything. So you'll see a lot coming your way now, and we're very happy to get going. There's much more downloads now. There's people writing to us, hey, thank you, you really saved me. My panic attack is much better now that I have ear kick, and, you know, I can sleep better due to the ambience mixer. And that just makes it so worth, you know, every time I post it in the general channel for the team to see, and to just know that even though people are anonymous, we can't reach out to them. We don't know who they are.
Right.
But sometimes you hear from the other side of the world, you hear a voice going, thank you guys, you know, thank you for doing this. Please keep up the good work.
I had no idea. I had no idea that was even something available, right?
That I didn't know that it existed. Some friend shared it with me, or, you know, I saw it in the app store and, oh, this is so cool. And, you know, just wanted to tell you guys. So that's gold. You can't pay that experience, right?
Isn't that amazing?
Of knowing that you're helping people.
I'll share little comments that we get, you know, with Jeffrey, and he'll be like, that's so amazing. And it isn't like the almost 2 million subscribers we care about or the listens that we get. It's those comments that are like, do you really think that? Because now I can't stop thinking that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know that people listen to what you're saying or doing when they quote you and when they engage rather than just giving you a thumbs up, right?
Right. I'm gonna say thank you for listening to Public Access America. Come back for our Thursday episode because it's gonna be more of this, and we're gonna be talking about interesting stuff about mental health and well-being. So find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. For our disabled listeners, check out Victor Reader, Audible, or Amazon Music as always. And check out our live streams on Sunday mornings. I wouldn't, but go ahead and do it.
To those who tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time.
To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I, poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome
to Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Apple
Podcasts. Stitcher Smart Radio, Public, and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America. History in the making.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.